Well, firstly, Erev Tov, good evening, everybody. Let me just try and centralize that camera. There you go. Okay, firstly, good Erev Chanukah. It's come around again. I don't know. I feel as if we're living kind of out-of-body experiences the whole time with these holidays, because it is the holiday, but it doesn't feel like the holiday. It's just strange world we are experiencing. And when it comes to Chanukah, there is such a wealth of information that it's difficult to know what to share with you. Last year, if you remember, we spoke about the famous question, why is Chanukah 8 days when there was one day of oil? And if the miracle took place, then it's a seven-day miracle, right? It's not an eight-day miracle. One day was covered by the oil. So if we have an eight-day holiday, why do we have the extra day, right? If we're celebrating the miracle, it should be a seven-day holiday. So enormous amount of literature. I got a phone call this evening from my grandson in Baltimore. Zadie, I've got a great question for you. Why is Chanukah 8 days? Should be 7 days. You know, he's 8 years old. I said, Bensie, I said, you've hit the nail on the head. I could be here for the next 3 hours giving you 150 answers and we still won't get to the bottom of it. So he was quite taken aback by that. So it's good. This is, you know, Torah is what really gives the light, the energy to all the holidays. The Gemara begins, My Chanukah, the famous Gemara in Gemara Shabbat. My Chanukah, what is Chanukah, says the Gemara. And the Gemara says, the next word, the Tanu Rabbanan. The rabbis have taught. So I remember hearing a rabbi in London, Rabbi Baumgarten, a very wonderful rabbi, he said, that's Chanukah, the Tanu Rabbanan, that the rabbis have been teaching so many lessons about Chanukah, that is what Chanukah is today. I know it's oil and lakkas and everything else, but the spiritual side, the Tanu Rabbanan, what the rabbis have taught us in so many areas of Jewish life, from the fantastic literature which is available on Chanukah. So what I want to do this evening is just share with you a couple of things which, again, I'm thinking, but I don't think I've said this before, and if I have, please bear with me. I know I didn't say it last year, but whether we've done a Chanukah shiur before that, I'm not quite sure, but I don't think I've said this. I know I said it in my central in Baltimore, I said this over, so please, you know, if you've heard it before, it's worth hearing again. That's definitely what I want to emphasize, because it's really something. Hi, Yaffa, good evening. Hello there.
Good evening, sorry. I was at a meeting. This is so ridiculous. The one Zoom to the other.
There you go.
I had to leave that meeting that started at 7.
It's unbelievable. It's what they call gum Zoom Latova. This is what somebody told me. You can't help it. It's terrible. All right. What we're gonna ask is two questions. Question number one, which is seemingly a very academic question, is that if I send you off to your bookshelf, hopefully everybody has at home some sort of collection of Hebrew books, the most basic thing that one would have in a collection, hopefully, I'm not saying you have to have this, but you know, this would be a standard thing. Nowadays, of course, you have it all online. But once upon a time, when we had books, you would have a Mishnah. Mishnayot, the famous Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, the six orders of the Mishnah, right? And what I challenge you to do is to go and look over there and find a chapter or a section, what they call them, a sechet, right? A section, a tractate, that's the word they use, a tractate Chanukah. Have a look. And before you go and do that, I will tell you, you won't find it. It's not there. You've got tractate Rosh Hashanah, you've got tractate Sukkah, even tractate Purim, you know, Megillah, but Chanukah is not in the Mishnah. So you'll say to me, wait a minute, I know my history, and Chanukah was much later than the Purim story. You know, it's 400 years after the Purim story. But the problem is, the Mishnah is 200 years after that. In other words, if we do our history, it's very simple. Chanukah, I always remember the day, 165 BCE, right? 165, everybody remembers that. And the Mishnah, we're talking about 200 CE, right? So it's 200 plus 165, 365 years. Okay, that's like today talking about Shakespeare, right? We're talking about Shakespeare before. It's 360 years later, and by that time one would have hoped Rebbe, the famous author, the editor of the Mishnah, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Judah the Prince, would have had the literature, put it all together to make a section about Hanukkah. It seems like so obvious. It's one of our, certainly one of our major rabbinic holidays, and it's one of the highlights of the year, literally. So why is there no Mishnah on Hanukkah? It's so weird. And to add, as they would say, insult to injury, if you want to call it that, when you look in the Mishnah, you look for references to Hanukkah, it's kind of, it's snuck in, you know, it's like that piece of paper you're always looking for under a pile of papers. So where do you find Hanukkah? You find it mentioned, let's give an example, there's a guy who's got a camel load of straw, right? It's the Middle East. You see this today as well. He's taking a camel load of straw through the street, and somebody, it's the Shuk in Yerushalayim, right? And a guy has lit his menorah, and you know in Israel they light the menorah outside the house, or outside the store, because the guy's lighting in that place. Maybe he lives there. And the menorah is burning, and it's on the street, on the corner of the store, and the camel comes past, and the straw gets, woof, it all gets burnt up by the menorah. Who's liable? Who pays for the straw? Is the shopkeeper allowed to say, well, I was allowed to put it out there, so I don't pay a penny? Or is the camel owner can say to the shopkeeper, well, you know what? This is not really the place to put it if camels are coming past with straw. And that's a whole section of Talmud talking about that particular problem on Hanukkah. Thank you very much, but that doesn't really help me. I want to know how to light the candles. I want to know how to make my donuts. You know, it's not giving me any information about Hanukkah. It's talking about a strange occurrence which may or may never have happened. Another example in the Mishnah, just that one comes to mind. It talks about Bikurim, right? We bring first fruits to the temple. So when do we bring Bikurim? So the rabbis say you bring Bikurim at a certain time, you know, Shavuot, we celebrate Chag HaBikurim. So from Shavuot to Sukkot, you bring Bikurim to the temple, and you have what is called Kurim.
Okay.
You have a recitation. You say a special thank you to Hashem. If you bring the Bikurim, you've been sitting on them for 6 months, don't ask me what state they're going to be in, and you bring them after Sukkot, till Hanukkah, says the Mishnah, right? So that's till now, from Sukkot till now, the last 8-9 weeks, then you bring them to the temple, but you don't say the thank you to Hashem. I guess the fruits have got a little bit soft or a little bit soggy, who knows? But the reality is, that's another mention of Hanukkah. It's nothing to do with lighting candles, nothing to do with all the things that we associate Hanukkah with. It's not there. And even if I'm looking further, you know, there's a whole discussion about what do we lay on Hanukkah. Thank goodness, at least something's in the Mishnah. But that again is for people who are, you know, worried about the laying, that's fine. You know, Abe Weintraub would be very excited about that. But the point is that that's all well and good, but Where is my Hanukkah Mishnah? Where is it? And even in Talmud, you know, I start looking, okay, I was told in Hebrew school there's always Mishnah followed by Talmud. Fine. So I'm looking for Talmud, and where do I find it? I open up the second chapter of Gemara Shabbat, and I know there's a whole section that we said every Friday night, Bama Madlikin, how do I light the candle? So in the middle of a whole discussion about how I light the Shabbat candles, the rabbis say, my Hanukkah. What's Hanukkah all about? And they give you a little bit of the story. Very little information about the whole event. Much more about the miracle in a way than anything else. And then there's a whole discussion, you know, how do I light the candles and what do I do? And fine. But it's in Gemara Shabbat, for goodness sake. Where is my Mishnah Hanukkah? And I'll tell you something else. And this is a connected question. And as I've sort of gone on in years, as they say, I've thought about this. Hanukkah celebrates two things. Hanukkah celebrates the miracle of the oil, which we all know, we've all been told. But there was also a war. There was a war going on with, we understand, with the Greeks or the Syro-Greeks or whatever history book you've read. And it occurred to me that essentially the celebration of winning the war is almost non-existent. We celebrate the finding of the oil. And we say this was an incredible miracle and whatever. Fine, but the war aspect of it is almost not there. I mean, I'll tell you what I compare this to. The Six-Day War. We had a phenomenal event, the Six-Day War. Somebody comes along and says, we're going to celebrate after the Six-Day War and Yom Yerushalayim, you know, the people say Hallel. But on top of that, you know what? I found when I was a soldier in Jerusalem, I was in a certain room somewhere, and I found one of these artifacts from the ancient world. Let's celebrate the find, because people thought it was lost. So you'll say to me, all right, you found the artifact. That's a celebration which you can have maybe as a one-off, but the war, you know, the Six-Day War is an incredible event. And that should surely be the focus of our celebration. And when it comes to Hanukkah, we almost are embarrassed to mention the war. We don't mention it. We have it in our tefillah. We'll come back to the tefillah later. But when we say, why do we do Hanukkah? You'll ask the average kid in school, my 8-year-old grandson, and he will tell you because they found the oil and it took 8 days, and he'll give you the whole story. Will he talk about the war almost to the point where he won't even mention it? The rabbis say, why do we have 8 days Hanukkah, 7 days for the oil, and 1 day to commemorate the war? That's one of the answers why we have an extra day. Fine. But the fact is that surely the prioritization here has gone a bit off. It seems that we've given massive priority to finding the little jar of oil, and almost a non-mention of the events of the war between the Jews and the Greeks, which lasted a long time, involved incredible number of people. We all know about Matityahu, Yochanan ben Matityahu, you know, all the different Yehuda Maccabee and all the various things. I will say in Israel, it's interesting, in Israel there is a lot more focus on the war for obvious reasons. It becomes a, for people who are not observant, Hanukkah is a wonderful national holiday, and they link it to, obviously, to the situation in Israel of winning the wars, the War of Independence, etc., etc. Fine. But in general, if we're asked, what is the focus of Hanukkah, none of us would say it's the winning the war. It's about the oil. And again, my very simple question, why is the focus away from the war, winning that war, and only essentially focused on the oil? So 2 points. Number one, where's my Mishnah? I feel hard done by. It's not there. And number two, what about this whole thing of not really being mentioning the war as part of the reason why we keep Hanukkah? Okay, so those are the two questions. And I want to show you that the rabbis have been absolutely perturbed by this over a long, long period of time. You know, when you dig into these things and you actually ask the awkward questions, it's amazing what you find. And have a look at this. This is really beyond belief. I'm going to do a share screen. Let's hope it... Oh, there you go. No, I don't want that one. I want this one. There you go. Right? Why is Hanukkah... I hope everybody can see it. Hanukkah is missing from the Mishnah. So I'm looking for answers. Why is there no Mishnah Hanukkah? So I came across someone called Rav Waldenberg. Waldenberg was the rabbi of Shari Tzedek. He died in 2006. I have the very distinct pleasure and honor to share with you that when last time I stayed in Yerushalayim proper, in around Machane Yehuda, I davened in a lovely little shul, very near to where we were staying, and it turned out that that's where Rabbi Waldenberg used to pray every single day. Right? They had a little plaque over his seat. Nobody sits there. He must have been the rov of the shul. And this man was amazing. He wrote over 20 volumes of responsa, questions mainly to do with Shari Tzedek, with the issues of medical stuff. I mean, this guy was really something else. And in the responsa that he wrote, he comes up with this question. I'll just read it through very quickly. And he says the following answer, and this is mind-blowing. He says that he brings various, the end of the first line, Masha katavta b'shem sefer chuta mashulash. Chum mashulash, he said, is b'shem maran rabbeinu hakodesh ma'ora gola ba'al chatam sofer zatzal. He says the answer to this question is found in the writings of Rabbi Moshe Sofer, famous chatam sofer, one of the great, great rabbis of the 19th century, who died in 1839. So it's a long time ago. And what does he write? She'amar, the Rabbi Sofer says, Ha delo niska b'mishna neis Chanukah. Why doesn't the Mishnah have the miracle of Chanukah in it? Right? In other words, there's no mention of Chanukah in the Mishnah, hardly anything at all. Hainu tama, the reason is, here comes a bombshell, Mishum, let me give you a bit, before I say it, let me just explain very briefly. In the story of Chanukah, we know that the Hasmonean dynasty that became the kings of Israel after the Hanukkah story, we know that they were Kohanim. Right? We say it in the Tefillah. Yochabed Matiyo, Kohen Gadol. Right? We say in the Alanissim that they were Kohenim. They led the battle. And they became the kings that took over after the story of Hanukkah, you know, after the whole war settled down. Now we know, and we're going to read it in a few weeks' time, Lo Yosa Shevet Miyuda. The kingship should belong to the tribe of Yehuda. So if the kings after Hanukkah were the Hasmoneans, Hasmoneans were Kohanim. They're not from the tribe of Yehuda, they're the tribe of Levi. So, you know what? There's a problem there. The problem seems to be that who took over the kingship of Israel, they were not necessarily the ones that were meant to be kings. I know it was an incredible thing that happened, and they won that war, but were they meant to be kings? The answer is no. So Judah the prince, the author, the editor of the Mishnah, in the year 200 of the Common Era, he was descended from King David. So he had a kind of personal agenda. My ancestor, King David, from the tribe of Judah, was his throne, let's get the Shakespearean expression, he was usurped by the Hasmonean dynasty. In which case, Rabbi Judah the prince would have got very upset about that, and he would have said, you know what, Hanukkah, I know it's a great holiday, and it's a great event, but it's got no place in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is edited by Judah the prince. He wants to make sure that the Mishnah is based on things which he himself, obviously, I'm not going to use the word support, but he feels very, that's what has to be in the Mishnah in terms of Jewish line. And Hanukkah represents an aberration. It represents moving away from the leadership that we should have had. We should have had leadership from the tribe of Yehuda. That's in the Second Temple period. And who did we end up with? We ended up with the Hasmonean dynasty. And if you look at the history of the Hasmoneans afterwards, it really went, I would say, from bad to worse. After the Hanukkah story, things went downhill. So, says the Chatam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, why is there no Mishnah Hanukkah? Because Judah the prince, who wrote down the Mishnah, didn't want to include Hanukkah, because they're not kosher. It wasn't a kosher event. It wasn't my people. My people should have been the tribe of Judah. Hanukkah represents the tribe of the Kohanim, the Levim. And you know what? Those guys, they took over the kingship, but I'm not going to put them in the Mishnah. It's so interesting. Listen to this. I'll just read it out here. I hope that makes sense. He says, Hainuta, third line. Hainuta, this is the reason why it's not in the Mishnah. Mishum derabbeinu bal masada Mishnah, because the rabbi who made the Mishnah, Judah the prince, Mizera, David Amela, he's descended from King David. V'neis Chanukah nasei de chashmanayim. The miracle of Hanukkah is from the Hasmonean dynasty. V'heima tofsu amalucha. Right, in Hebrew, tofsu means they usurp. That's a good word for it. They grab the kingship. Velo hayu mizera David. They were not from the descendants of David. So says Rabbi Sofer, although Rabbi Wallenberg gives more explanation on that, but I wanted to sort of leave it at that point on that issue. He says that Judah the prince wanted to preserve for posterity the events which he felt were correct and, you know, should be remembered. Hanukkah in the Mishnah was not one of them. Unbelievable. I mean, it is actually unbelievable. And he said, what Rabbi Wallenberg just says at the end is that the fact that this dynasty of the Hasmoneans took over the kingship of Israel, as much as it's a historical fact, Judah the prince wanted to keep the Mishnah. He said he wanted to keep it as he's, where does he put it here? He says not because of his own honor. Judah the prince didn't feel his own honor was slighted, not worried about his own honor, but he wanted to preserve the honor of King David. And the honor of King David is to say that the dynasty that would run and be kings in Eretz Israel would be from the tribe of Judah. And the Hasmoneans were not from the tribe of Judah. So, you know what? How does Judah the prince show his dissatisfaction? By not including Hanukkah in the Mishnah. Go figure. Unbelievable. And that's the answer that is suggested. I'll be honest with you. Rabbi Sofer was one of the greats, no question about it. If I would have suggested something like that, I would have been scared that I would have actually been thrown out of the synagogue and never been admitted ever again. Because, you know, what I'm basically suggesting is that there's been a bit of censorship going on over here. Not censorship which we would normally be happy with, was censoring the holiday of Chanukah. I mean, it's mind-blowing. But that is the answer that Rabbi Sofer gives. Again, very simply, why is there no Chanukah in the Mishnah? You know why? Because Chanukah does not represent this blazing victory that we think it is. It represents also there's a downside to the holiday. What's the downside? That the Mishnah was to reflect the positive elements in Jewish life, and Chanukah represents, unfortunately, a negative element. Who took over the kingship? Not the people who should, but the Hasmoneans, after Judah and Maccabee and everybody else. The people who took it over were not the people who should have been running the show. Unbelievable. No Chanukah in the Mishnah, right. And that's the way he leaves it. Quite extraordinary. Extraordinary. Let me go back to the screen. All right? I hope that point is clear, because it's shocking how controversial that is. You know, that the editor of the Mishnah, I mean, I suppose the editor does have the right to censor what goes into the paper, what doesn't go into the paper, right? But in this case, wow, that Yehuda Anasi, the great Judah the Prince, would have kept Chanukah out of the Mishnah because it doesn't reflect the yichus that it should reflect. I'm, every time I read that, I'm bowled over by that. It's just beyond belief. Yeah, Yaffa, please.
Is it also the fact that the war of the Hashmonaim was really, as you taught us last year, an internal...
We're going to come to that. Yeah, I'm going to mention it. I'm going to explain that, because you're absolutely right. We're going to come to that. If I mentioned it, as I said before, it's really worth mentioning again. This is the third answer which I'm going to give you. I've got a second answer. The third answer to the question is what Rav Soloveitchik said, and this is the key to the whole holiday. So I'm glad. Wow, you remember from last year. You really are impressive. Good for you.
I should also tell you that I listened today to another shiur by a brilliant woman, Dina Freundlich Rock. I don't know if you know her. She's Rabbanit.
I know who she is.
She was Drisha's, she made Aliyah.
She was in Florida.
Incredible, but her take was completely different than yours, and I'll wait till you're done.
Okay. We're gonna have a completely different suggestion about why there's no Chanukah in the Mishnah. Listen to this. Again, I'm going to give an example. I'm going to, you know, if I text Abe Weintraub, right? Because he's a Balkur, he's a wonderful Balkur.
My brother.
Yaffa's brother. And I'll ask him, hey, what were you taught in Hebrew school about the writing of the Mishnah. What did they tell you? Why was the Mishnah written down? So you know what they I'm sure Abe will tell me what I was told by my teacher, wherever it was, a long time ago, that in Israel the Romans were in control. And they were oppressing the Jews. There was a lot of trouble with the Roman authorities, right? I'm sure many of you have heard this before. And the Torah was being forgotten. It was oral, meaning that it was spoken as opposed to being written. And in the course of time, the things got forgotten. They just could not maintain, preserve that amount of information orally, you know, from memory. So eventually, Judah the Prince, in the year 200 of the Common Era, which is already, you know, the Romans came to Israel before the Common Era, right? There's 60 BCE, I think it was, 63, whenever it was, Julius Caesar came in or whatever. The reality is that the Romans had been there already for over 200 years, right? So at that point, with all the oppression, and remember with the destruction of the temple and with the story of Bar Kokhba and Beitar and everything that had happened, the reality of it was that the Torah was being forgotten. That's the standard reason why the Mishnah had to be written down. But it's written down in very brief presentation, and then you get the Gemara to explain exactly what's going on, and Jewish scholarship goes into outer space from there. Now the reality is, it's very interesting. There was a famous librarian who worked in Israel for many years. He was the librarian at Sifriyat HaRambam. I think that's either in Tel Aviv or it was in Haifa. I don't remember where it was exactly. And then I think he also went from there to the Hebrew University. A man who was an unbelievable Talmud Chacham. He came from Poland. His name was Reuven Margoliot, or Margolius, right, in the Ashkenazic pronunciation. Reuven Margolius was a man who was so brilliant. And I mean, to be a librarian and being that brilliant is a phenomenal bracha for him. Every book that he needed to refer to was at his fingertips. So he didn't need the internet. You know, he knew it up here. And this is a man, I'm not exaggerating, he wrote over 100 books. 100 books. I think they count even to 150. I've got maybe a selection of 7 or 8 of his books, and they're all in very obscure material. He writes about the names of angels, and he's got a whole book on Kabbalistic meaning of something else. This was a guy who was into everything. He was a remarkable scholar. He passed away in 1971, and I'm glad to say that politically he was very much towards the center, you know, Mizrahi, he was in that particular world. They had great scholars who were also not, they didn't have to be Haredi to be great scholars. I'm glad to say you had Rabbi Zevin, you had Rabbi Margolius. These were great, great men. And the reality was as follows. Says Rabbi Margolius, he says, you know what? He's not convinced that this is why the Mishnah was written down, because of Roman oppression. He said, you know, in Jewish history, there were times when things were forgotten. Go back to the earliest days, when the Jews came into Eretz Israel, there is a very famous tradition that because of the mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jews forgot 3,000. That's a lot. 3,000 laws were forgotten because of the grief that was experienced when Moshe died.
Enough? We need
3,000
more?
3,000 more. And the story is that there was a famous shofet called Otniel ben Kenaz. He was the half-brother of Kalev, very famous. Kalev, the partner of Yoshua. Otniel ben Kenaz managed to bring back from his studies those 3,000 laws. I'm glad to say they're not documented anywhere. We're just told about the number. I don't know what laws they're referring to, and I'm assumed they've been subsumed into what we have today, what we call Oral Torah. But the point's like this. Says Rabbi Margolius, when those laws were forgotten, there was not a panic to write it all down, whatever was left. You know, you think they forgot 3,000, they're going to forget another 3,000, what's going to be left? And but there was no panic, there was no sense that they had to write it down. So why with the Roman oppression do they have to write it down? What was really going on about the writing down of these laws? Says Rabbi Margolius, he says something phenomenal. It's just how these rabbis were. He was prepared to be controversial, and I love that. He says, listen, the story is not quite the way it's usually presented. He said what happened was that the Romans took over Eretz Israel, and in Eretz Israel, along with all the other countries they took over, they found the Jews. And you know what, in Rome they were very mystified. What is the Jewish religion all about? What do the Jews do? What are their practices? What are they, you know, we're pagan and we do this and, you know, we have all these gods and all this stuff. What do the Jews do? So there's stories in the Talmud that they used to send people to Israel, and rabbis used to go to Rome, and they had philosophical discussions about the religion. What is it all about? Right? And this went on for many, many years, and the Romans became more educated. There is a lot of evidence that they weren't always anti-Semitic. What the Romans hated, a severe crime you committed against Rome was rebellion. And again, you see these in the movies. If you ever see movies about the Roman Empire, it's all about rebellion. When you rebelled against the Romans, then they sent the troops and the battalions and, you know, all the, to put down the rebellion. But when there was no rebellion going on, things were sort of quiet. Things were calm. And it's fascinating. Says Rabbi Margolius, he says, listen, the Romans were coming to Eretz Israel and getting all this information over a long period of time. And we know that Judah the Prince was very pally with somebody called Antoninus. In English, he's known as Mark Antony, right? It was getting back to Shakespeare. Now, the reality of it is that this friendship between Rebbe, Judah the Prince, and Mark Antony was very, very famous. And Rebbe, in that period of time, decided that he was the leader of the Jewish community, and he was the man that they would go to for questions about the Jewish religion. So Rebbe was a smart guy. He said, if I send back to Rome certain elements of our religious life, then the Romans are going to say, whoa, hang on a second, I thought these Jews were nice and placid, and they were calm people, you know, and they just like their food, and they like their kiddushes, and all that stuff. But, you know, if for instance, Rebbe would have written in the Mishnah about Hanukkah, just imagine what the Romans would have thought. If he put it in the Mishnah, and that goes back to Rome, then the Romans look at the Mishnah and say, wow, what? There's a story here. Once upon a time, the Jewish army, a tiny group of people, mainly rabbis, they made a rebellion against the great Syrio-Greeks. You know, these are people that we look up to in our Roman history, right? You know, they know the history of the Greeks. And this was a sign of rebellion. And the Romans would have been very unfriendly when they would have read that. And it's very interesting suggestion. Because what it's saying is that, again, Rebbe was smart. He knew that the Mishnah was not going to be in, let's say, put in just amongst the Jews. It was something that was going to explain Judaism essentially to the wider world. And to me, it's a comparison to what the writings of Rabbi Sacks. Right? We spoke about Rabbi Sacks a few weeks ago, and they just did the Shloshim. There's a wonderful tribute to him from Prince Charles, really worth looking at. Even Charles got the Hebrew right, which is amazing, because he doesn't do Hebrew very well. But it's really something. And again, what Rabbi Sacks was so good at is sort of getting that message out there to the whole world, but it was a very positive message. In fact, there's an interesting story that one of his books, he had to rewrite a whole chapter. And the reason was because it was written for the non-Jewish world, but it said something which the Haredim, the right-wing element in England, read it, and they started accusing him of heresy, because he wrote something about the religions of the world which they didn't agree with. And it was very tough on him at the time, you know, because, and he made that mistake that his books would actually go to, he thought they would go to the outside world, but in fact they were read by Jews as well. And that maybe was a bit of a shock to him, but also, in the end, something very good. They have to be read by everybody. But what I'm saying is that, going back to the Mishnah was very doctored to make sure that the Romans would not get any sense of rebellion. So you know what the Romans did? You know what Judah the Prince did? He missed out Hanukkah. He missed out Mashiach. Right? Look what happened with JC and the whole story with the Messianic movement in Israel. Look how that turned out. And he missed out interesting things from the Mishnah. There's no Mishnah about Tefillin. There's no Mishnah about Tzitzis, because that's the Jewish uniform. Right? The Tefillin, they used to wear Tefillin all day. It's not in the Mishnah. It's not there because that, again, is a sign of independence. It's a sign that when we have our own uniform, our own clothes that we wear, and our own religious items that we show to the whole world, that's something which the Romans would consider an act of rebellion. And as a consequence, it's just so interesting, as a consequence, it's not in the Mishnah. So there's no Mashiach, there's no Tefillin, there's no Tzitz, there's a whole bunch of things which are not in the Mishnah. So
this was a shashtil.
It's the shashtil idea. And, you know, Rebbe understood, if we keep things nice and level, then the Romans will leave us alone. And, you know, during that period, Rebbe became an amazingly wealthy man. He was the wealthiest man. He was the greatest rabbi in Israel. He was the wealthiest man in Israel. And it's an amazing story. And there's a lot of incredible stories about him. But the thing I like about this is that it makes real sense to me that when they wrote down the Mishnah, they did it being aware of what the readership was going to be like. And it was sent to Rome. It was given to the Romans. Obviously, they would have someone to explain it, to translate it. Plenty of Jews living in Rome at that time. And they would then see that the Mishnah, alright, they're worried about their ritual law, and they're worried about their Sabbath, and they're worried about their shofar and everything else. But you know what? They don't have any sign of rebellion. So it's not in the Mishnah. And says Rabbi Margolius, that is why you don't find a section of Mishnah dealing with Hanukkah. It's fascinating. And why I find it fascinating, because it breaks a stereotype answer of why the Mishnah was written down, which I never really was comfortable with. Right? I always was told they wrote it down because they would be forgetting it. So why would they forget it then, as opposed to any other time, previous or post, that all of a sudden their minds became full of forgetfulness? And again, why would Rebbe be so sensitive? Because of what we just mentioned. There'd been the Churban, the temple had been destroyed, they had the Bar Kokhba revolt, which the Romans eventually put down, and they had Beitar and all these incredible events that happened. And the Romans showed that the only thing they really hated more than anything else was rebellion. So Judah the Prince decided, I want to keep the Romans quiet, I want to keep them calm, and I'm not going to mention this stuff in our written documents which explain the Jewish religion, known as the Mishnah. And you know what? It's a great answer. I'm more comfortable in a way with that than to suggest that Judah the Prince did a bit of censorship to protect his family honor. I'm not comfortable with that, even though such a great rabbi said it. You know, Chassam Sofer was a great rabbi. But there's a bit of an issue with that. But Rabbi Margolius, that to me is a great answer. Again, very simply, why is there no Hanukkah in the Mishnah? The basic reason is because it was not something which Judah the Prince wanted to show to the Romans, that this is part of our tradition. Hanukkah is about, you know, standing up and fighting for who we are. That, again, is a very interesting suggestion, and I like it very much. The third answer, which is given by Rav Soloveitchik, and this I must have mentioned to you before, but I'm going to say it again. And the Rav said something phenomenal. He said that there are two descriptions of situations of destruction where we use two different words to describe. I'll tell you what he was referring to. He says, when we talk about Tisha B'Av, and we talk about destruction of the temple, I just use the word. The word we use is Churban, destruction. When we talk about, Hanukkah, we talk about Tumah. Hanukkah is the word that we use is impurity. They made the country, they made the place impure. So, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, why do we have these two different descriptions for essentially the same sort of situation where we're being afflicted, we're being oppressed, things are being destroyed, our lives are being wiped out. Why in one situation, when the temple is destroyed, is it called Churban? What does that mean? As opposed to what happened in the Hanukkah story, where it talks about the language is used of tuma, of ritual impurity. So says Rabbi Soloveitchik, a phenomenal chiddush. He says something incredible. He said there's a statement in the Talmud, and the Talmud statement goes like this. It says that if, God forbid, you see a Sefer Torah on fire, God chas v'sholem, it says that not only do you tear kriya, you're like at a funeral, you have to tear your cloak twice. The Gemara says, more in Moed Cotton, it's Moed Cotton, page 26. You tear kriya twice. It says, once you tear it for the parchment, and the second time you tear, so I presume you do it on each side of your jacket, right? And the first tear is for the parchment, the second tear, he says, is for the letters that are being destroyed. Because the fire is burning the parchment, which is holy, and the letters, which are also holy. That's the discussion in the Gemara. And the Gemara says the proof is from one of the kings of Israel, a king by the name of, let me get his name right, Jehoiakim, right? He was the son of Josiah, of Yoshio, one of the kings at the end, just before the destruction of the temple, who was accused of, also one of the things he did, he really was not one of the great heroes of Israel, and the Gemara gives a whole story that he was involved with burning a Sefer Torah. Because he was idolatrous, he didn't believe in what the Torah stood for. Very difficult story. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, we've got another story in the Talmud, which is about the events of the destruction of the temple. The famous story, there was a famous rabbi. His name was Chananya ben Tradio. Chananya ben Tradio was one of the great, great rabbis of his generation. And Nebuch, what happened was that he committed the ultimate sin of the Romans at that time. Remember, the Romans got very heavy when the rebellion started, and they forbade Jews to teach Torah in public. And Rabbi Chananya ben Trajan said, can't abide by that, like Rabbi Akiva, the same story, and he gave public lectures. And of course the Romans heard about it, and they arrested him. And they made a court case, or whatever they did, and they're going to kill him. And Nebuch, they were going to burn him at the stake. A bit like the Inquisition, no messing around. So unfortunately, it says that that's exactly what they did. right? There's a whole statement in the Gemara, which I'm looking at my time, and I'm not going to go through it, but it's on my screen share. But I'll just tell you, let me just show you this one phrase. I've got to show you this phrase, because this is famous. The phrase that I think many of you will know is that it says that as Rabbi Hananiah ben Trajan was dying, Nebuch, the students were standing there and they said, Rebbe, it's the fourth line, I've just got the arrow on it. Ma taro'e, they said, what do you see, Rebbe? And he said to them, Amar lehem, he said to them, Gilyon nisrafim, I see the parchment is burning, otiyot porchot, but the letters are flying up to the heaven. Wow. If you go to my shul in where I daven for 18 years in Fairlawn, the Shomrei Torah, you will see there's at the back of the shul, this statement of Talmud is, there's a whole piece which was designed by one of the very, very wonderful artists there. And he made an image of this. Letters flying up to heaven. So this is the story of the rabbi Nebuch when he was dying. So said Rabbi Soloveitchik, what's going on here? And on one hand, we saw that when the Sefer Torah is burning, there has to be Kriya being torn twice, one side or the other side, once for the parchment, and once for the otiyot, for the letters that are burning. In the story, when the Romans are killing this rabbi, it says the parchment was burning, but the letters were flying up to heaven. So says Rabbi Soloveitchik, what is the difference between the two situations? And he said it's obvious. He said, the situation when the Romans are killing the rabbi, he said, that is the situation where a non-Jew is trying to destroy what we would refer to as the Torah. And the non-Jew destroying the Torah, they can destroy the parchment. They can make whatever they want to make of the parchment, but they can never destroy the holiness of the letters of the Torah. Those letters, just when the Torah, God forbid, is burnt, the letters, symbolically, they go back to Shemayim, they go back to heaven. He says that is what is called in Talmud, Churban. Churban is when a non-Jew is trying to destroy the Torah. Why did we have to tear the Kriya, the tearing of the coat, twice? We said once for the parchment and once for the letter. The answer is there, because it's a Jew who's burning the Torah. When a Jew is destroying the Torah, God forbid, then not only is the parchment destroyed, but the letters can also be affected as well. He says that is what is called tumah. That is impurity. That is, unfortunately, I was just thinking today that where there are many, many Jews coming out with things which are really very disturbing in the wider world against Israel and making statements. It's all part, you know, what we call self-hating Jews, and we don't have a shortage of these people, unfortunately. It's a very difficult world we live in, from that point of view. And what Rabbi Soloveitchik was saying is really very beautiful. He said Hanukkah is different to Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was Churban, because that was a destruction by the non-Jews against the Jew. And the parchment was destroyed, but the letters were intact, and we've survived. But Hanukkah was much more serious. Because Hanukkah was Jew against Jew. What does he mean? We all know that there's this expression which we've heard again in our Hebrew school. There was a group of people called Hellenists. Who were the Hellenists? In Hebrew, Mityavnim. Mityavnim were not Greeks.
They were Jews.
They were Jews who went into Greek culture in such hands, feet, and everything else. And they were the ones that really took the battle to the other Jew. It was a civil war. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik that is Hanukkah. It was an action, it was a situation of tumah. And he brings a phenomenal comment. Listen to this. I'll just go back to the screen. I've just got Al HaNisim here, and I'll just show you. We all know Al HaNisim. And Al HaNisim, the famous phrase, it says, we say to God, you won the battle. It says that Nakamta Nikmatam, you brought the revenge against the enemy. Masata Giborim Biat Chalashim, the mighty were given over to the weak, right? The Jewish army, the faithful Jews were very small, but they won. Rabin, the majority, Biat Ma'atim, were given over to the few. Tameim Biat Tahurim, those who were impure went into the hands of the pure. Rishoyim biyad tzadikim, the Rishoyim, the evil, went to the hands of the righteous. Zaydim biyadoski sarasecha, and those who are presumptuous, those who were breaking the law, were handed to those who kept the Torah. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, there's one thing missing here. If this was a battle between the army of the Jews and the Greek army, there should be another phrase. It should say, Yevonim biyad Yehudim, that God gave over the Greeks into the hands of the Jews. It doesn't say that. And says Rabbi Soloveitchik, you know why it doesn't say it? Because it wasn't really Greek against Jew. It was really Hellenized Jew against Jew. Jew v. Jew. And that is not Churban, that is Tumah. He says that is a situation of impurity. And said Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I think this goes now, the answer, the third answer to our question, why is Hanukkah not in the Mishnah? Because you know what? It's embarrassing. Hanukkah represents, and Nebuch, I'm sorry to say this because I want to end on a high note, Hanukkah represents an embarrassment. It's an embarrassing history of the fact, when we look at the history, of Jew against Jew. Now remember at the beginning I asked two questions. I said Hanukkah is a celebration, no, not in the Mishnah, and now we've tried to answer that, even with Rav Soloveitchik's answer, it's not in the Mishnah because it's embarrassing. But you know what? We had a second question. Why is Hanukkah not focused on the war? It's only focused on the little jar of oil. And that's the beautiful message of Hanukkah. Because the war, in fact, is embarrassing. The war is we're not really focused on it. I know we have it in Al HaNisim when we sort of talk about it, but that's in Tefillah, but we don't make that the focus of our celebration, right? We don't get up and start singing songs about winning the war. What we sing about is about the Pach HaShemen. We sing about the, Aneris Alolo Olamadnikim. We praise God for the lamps, for the lights, for the menorah. And that, I think, is the answer to that question. Why do we not have almost zero focus on the war? Because it's embarrassing, as the Rav said. But what we do have the focus on, which is really the message of Hanukkah, is this beautiful concept of the oil representing the light, the essence of Torah. And that is what Hanukkah is really, really about. As I said at the beginning, my Hanukkah, and the Gemara said, what's Hanukkah? Tanu Rabbanan, the teachings of the rabbi. Because in the end of the day, what has been keeping us going for so long is not a culture of war. This was the whole problem at the beginning of the State of Israel, when people were so upset with the parades on Yom HaTzma'ut, which were very warlike, showing off weapons. That stopped very early on. But right at the beginning, and many people were upset about that, because that's not who we are. I know that we have to defend ourselves. Thank God we can. But we're not a warlike nation. We never were. It's just not who we are. We have to fight, but only because we have to, not because we want to. And that is, again, something which is pushed to the side. It's not what Hanukkah is about. Hanukkah is about the essence of celebrating what we always celebrate, which is the deeper spiritual meaning, the light that comes from that little jar of oil, which brings so much light, not just to the temple, but to every Jewish home, literally for the last 2,000 years. But again, let's just summarize, because I hope this resonated. The basic question, Hanukkah is not in the Mishnah. Chatam Sofer, because it's to do with a bit of censorship from the editor of the Mishnah, Judah the Prince. Not very happy. Again, same idea. He's not happy with the outcome of Hanukkah because the Maccabees were Kohanim and they shouldn't have taken over. They shouldn't have been the kings. Reuven Margolius, answer number two. He says that again. When they wrote down the Mishnah, Judah the Prince was careful not to mention Hanukkah. He didn't want to upset the Romans. He didn't want the Romans to see Hanukkah as a rebellion. The war aspect of Hanukkah is something that we don't want to play too much into, because it would have created a massive problem for the Jewish community in Israel if the Romans would have believed that we were in the throes of making a rebellion. And answer number three, according to Rav Soloveitchik, is that the war was an embarrassment. Because in the end of the day, it wasn't Churban, it was Tumah. Timu Kol Hashmanim is the bigger picture, is that in fact, Jew against Jew created that sense of impurity. And of course, what message comes out of this for Jew against Jew is so powerful that what we have to do in Israel today, I mean, I just heard today there's another election. The last thing you need in Israel is a fourth election in the middle of a pandemic. What is going on? Where's the Jewish cop? Where's the Jewish mind? They need another election, right? And when you start watching Israeli news, you know, you have it on TV every day here, you see the Israeli news, they're already shouting at each other. They can't get their words loud enough to over... And you're saying to yourself, Jew against Jew, we don't need this. Let's think about Hanukkah. Let's think about what Hanukkah really is. It's a lesson to say, Jew against Jew, that is the ultimate embarrassment. It's the ultimate shame that we, unfortunately, seem to have with us. We carry it with us, and we can't seem to shake it off. And when it comes to Hanukkah, where is the emphasis? It's on the oil. It's on that light. What light we can bring to the world. Again, if you are going back to Rabbi Sacks, what so many people said on Sunday in their tribute to him was how much of a light he brought to their lives. People like Tony Blair. Tony Blair was not one of my heroes when I was living in England. He was the Prime Minister, the Labour Prime Minister. And Gordon Brown, who I never even knew, a Scots guy who took over. And these guys were talking about Rabbi Sacks as if they were talking about the Havdil. He was their Rebbe. He gave them purpose and meaning in their lives. It's unbelievable. And that was really something people are asking, is there anyone in Jewish history that's ever done that in the last 500 years? And people are scratching their heads trying to say, who made that impression on so many leaders in the world the way that Rabbi Sacks did? It's very rare, right? His problem was more with the Jews. He didn't have such a great time with this community. But when it came to the wide world, it was unbelievable. Really unbelievable. And what I'm leaving you with is really these thoughts for Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a message, it's a warning. Point to Rav Soloveitchik, a very powerful warning. Jew against Jew, we've got to do something to eradicate this. We've got to do something to push it out of our world. Wherever we are, make Jews come closer together. Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. But at the same time, understand the history. Get real about Hanukkah. And realize the focus on the oil was not because people want to have donuts. Very nice, but it's more about what that represents, the deeper spiritual meaning of the light which we're desperate for. Look, you know, more light in our lives, particularly at the moment, is something we just can't have enough of that. And I hope that that resonates with everybody. I really do. I hope that message, I didn't want to end on a down, because it is pretty shocking what we're saying about the war side of things, but I wanted to end on an up. That the oil is the focus, because that is really what it's about. That beautiful message of light, of hope, of. In fact, I'm just going to add one comment that the Gemara says, what is the mitzvah of Hanukkah? Ne'er ishu bikto. It's to do with the home. The home is part of what Hanukkah is about. Ne'er ishu. You light the candle, it's got to be in the home. And that is, again, a message which we give out to the whole world. The power, the beauty, the incredible gift that we almost take for granted, but the rest of the world doesn't take for granted, it's all, and that's the concept of family and home life, and the Jewish home, and that's something, and that's what Hanukkah is about, a celebration of who we are and what we represent. I'm getting carried away with this, but I just love this stuff. Just a few comments, please. Yes, Yafa.
Yeah. So what you just said, that is how she ended her teaching today about
great minds.
Lighting in the home, it's a mitzvah. You have to light in your own home where you sleep,
yeah,
because you have to bring the Shekhinah into your house. So she focused on the Mai Hanukkah, and then the Gemara says something about the oil.
Right.
So certainly, she was saying, that isn't the greatest miracle that ever happened, that there was light. I mean,
correct.
Other miracles, you know, Kriyat Yom Suf happened, other things that much more monumental. Why focus on this? So she connected that to Chanukat HaBayit. Every time you consecrated the Mikdash, the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan, it was on the 25th day of Kislev.
Right.
Always that day. So that was a significant thing. And in Hanukkah, you know, the light did not stay lit the entire time because of what you said about the
Hashmonaic. Right.
Exactly kosher and exactly.
And it wasn't, yeah. Yeah.
And I tell you
what I like about what this presentation is about. It's saying, you know, we can be honest about our history. We need to be honest about it. And sometimes we're not very honest about it to ourselves. And, you know, there were a lot of issues post-Hanukkah when you read the history. Now, there are very good history books out there. And we need to be honest, but that doesn't detract from the beauty of the holiday. It just gives us an extra dimension of what we need to be careful with when learning about the holiday, when getting real about the holiday. And
certainly
it's a beautiful...
not about presents.
You know, we've been influenced by the world, what can I say? So many shopping days left to Hanukkah, you know, that sort of comment. It's one of those my favorite phrases. I hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful Hanukkah. I really do. It should be uplifting. It should be enjoyable. Do the Zoom thing. If you've never done Zoom with your grandchildren, it's just, we got to do it. I know it's not the hug, it's not the kiss, but you know what? It's something. It really is. And in a way, sometimes it gets you closer to the kids because they see that you're playing with in their world. Because their world is a very technical world, even if they're very young. Our world is pencil and paper. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's what I still do. I still have a diary, for goodness sake. I write down things. I make lists. It's shocking. But their world, you know, so I find Zoom very often breaks that barrier, certainly with my students, you know, when they see that I can actually get out of a problem when I've got a Zoom problem. And even with the grandchildren, you know, just to make that connection, you're in their world, it brings you maybe a little bit closer, a bit closer than you realize. So I hope everybody has that beautiful connection. Mirza Shem, 2 weeks' time, we're going to talk a little bit about the fast days, but I don't want it to be depressing. I'm going to talk a bit about the history, the biblical history, going right back to days which, you know, we need to remember. A lot of similar messages that we're talking about today, in 2 weeks' time, it's going to be a bit of Tanakh. I do want to focus ourselves a little bit more towards Bible study, because that's what I do, doing it for 40 years. Teaching Bible, and there are so many wonderful things, Tanakh, which we deprive ourselves. We just don't learn them the way we should. And Bezrat Hashem, that's really the way I want to go. Please go for the next couple of sessions to be continued. Everybody have a wonderful Hanukkah, a lichtige Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Rabbi Schaefer, for putting us in the spirit and the mood for Hanukkah, the beautiful things to think about. And Ken and I sponsored these last two classes, and the Irwins are sponsoring another upcoming class, and we're looking for others to participate as well. So be in touch with me.
Yeah, we'll sponsor one.
Okay, wonderful.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.
And make this possible for us to learn together, and we should keep doing it, and thank you for your contribution.
Thank you so much. A very happy Hanukkah to everybody.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Hug some out.